You've probably seen a lot of things online and wondered if they're true. A friend of mine recently sent me a clip in which someone is analyzing the first word in the Hebrew Bible. And since my friend knows that I'm familiar with biblical Hebrew, she asked me if it's accurate. So I looked at it and I thought it would be fun to examine it together. To learn more, join me for today's episode of All Things Apostolic. When we see really cool ideas online, it can be inspiring, but then there is a part of us that wonders if it's really true. And this is what happened with an online clip that my friend saw in which a woman analyzes the first word of the Hebrew Bible to gain some spiritual insights. Is her analysis true and correct? Well, let's find out. We're going to start by viewing the clip.
The Hebrew word for beginning is this word right here, bereshit. And remember, they read from right to left. So we will break down every letter together. So from right to left, this is the letter Beit, Resh, Aleph, Shin, Yod, and Tav, which spells Bereshit, which means beginning. The letter Beit, or B, means tent, and the letter Resh, or R, means the chief, the head chief. Together, B-R is read as bar, and together it means son. The letter Aleph is kind of like a vowel, and it means Adonai, so we'll do a heart for God. The letter Shin means to destroy, so it's kind of like, looks like a claw, so that's how I remember it. This character means hand, the letter Yod. And this last character is Tav, which is T, and it means cross or covenant. To summarize, Beit, Resh, Aleph, Shin, Yod, Tav spell Bereshit, which means the beginning, and it's already forming a sentence, the Son of God destroyed by his own hand on the cross. But we're not done yet. Earlier, we discussed how Beit and Resh together is pronounced bar, which means son, so there are words within this word. Another one is Shin, Yod, and Tav together. It is read say it, but the English word is thorns. And if you want to look it up, the concordance number is H7898. Next, we have Resh, Aleph, and Shin, which is read as Rosh. And in English, it means head. So just to prove it, we've got Resh, Aleph, and Shin right there. The next word we're going to discuss is Berosh, which is spelled with a B, R, and Shin. So it's this except for Aleph. So this means tree, cypress tree, actually. These two together, the Shin and Yod, means gift. And again, Tav means cross or covenant. Okay, let's try to put this together. The Son of God destroyed by his own hand on the cross with thorns on his head hung up on a tree as a gift of the covenant.
The first step is to confirm that the woman is referring to the correct word with the correct spelling. This is the first word of the Hebrew Bible, and it's Bereshit. Reading from right to left, it consists of six Hebrew letters, Beit, Resh, Aleph, Shin, Yod, and Tav. So she has spelled it correctly. Now, I'm used to looking at Hebrew words from a grammatical or linguistic standpoint, so let's do that first. If we examine the grammatical nature, it looks and sounds like one word, Bereshit, but it's actually in two parts. The first part is the bet. This letter, when prefixed to the beginning of a word, acts like a preposition. It can mean in, with, or on. In this verse, the meaning in fits the context the best. The rest of the word is reshit, and it is a noun. It means beginning, chief, first, or principal thing. So together, this one word with two parts is translated as in the beginning. The grammatical analysis is how I'm familiar with studying the Hebrew language. However, there are other Jewish traditions, especially from Sefer Yetzirah and later Kabbalah, that assign deeper symbolic meanings to each letter. I'm not very familiar with Kabbalah, so I did some research on it. Kabbalah is a Jewish mystical tradition that began in the 12th and 13th centuries as a distinct movement within Judaism in medieval Europe. Kabbalah retains the traditional discipline of Torah, which are the first five books of the Bible, and its commandments, but there is a belief that the commandments also have a cosmic impact. Kabbalah looks at symbolism, allusions, and multiple layers of meaning in the text. So there is a blend of tradition and innovation. The Kabbalists claim, at least some of them, that their mystical teachings derive from the Garden of Eden. They believe that Kabbalah conveys our original nature, the unbounded awareness of Adam and Eve. They believe we have lost this nature, the most ancient tradition, as the inevitable consequence of tasting the fruit of knowledge. A Kabbalist yearns to recover the primordial tradition, to regain cosmic consciousness without renouncing the world. Many people use Kabbalah as a catch-all term for any mystical practice vaguely associated with Jewish ideas. However, scholars use it for a precise tradition of Jewish mysticism, claiming ancient origins, but which didn't actually appear in print in writing in some form until the 12th and 13th centuries. Kabbalah is somewhat complicated, but there are some general ideas. One belief is that the Torah has layers of mysterious meaning that require direct spiritual experiences and training to uncover. Usually, the process involves understanding numerology, such as hidden meanings in number patterns. Items besides numbers, like the Hebrew alphabet and the letters, also have hidden spiritual meanings. Second, Kabbalistic training is meant to help people to understand God. But this proves difficult because God is vast and unknowable. He is the unlimited light from which creation came. Since God is so mysterious, we come closest to Him by exploring His emanations, or levels of being that emanate from Him. Generally, there are three modern methods that people use to explore Kabbalah. One is theoretical Kabbalah, which reads and studies Kabbalistic texts to see how the universe fits together and what God has called us to do. Practical Kabbalah is magic, using Kabbalistic images combined with rituals to influence the world. The magic could range from trying to heal a sickness to making a clay golem statue come to life. A third modern method is meditative Kabbalah, which uses methods like meditating on the Hebrew alphabet to achieve a mystical experience. This comes from the medieval prophetic or ecstatic method of achieving spiritual ecstasy. This ecstatic form of Kabbalah emphasizes meditative techniques, looking at combinations of the letters of the Hebrew alphabet. The most prominent ecstatic Kabbalist was Abraham Abulafia, I'm not sure if I'm saying that right, who lived in the 1200s. He taught that if one meditates on abstract truths, that's good, but limited. Rather, he recommended that one focus on the pure forms of the letters of the alphabet as the highest form of this type of meditation. It is even acceptable to jump or skip letters, a type of free association between various combinations of letters, guided by fairly lax rules. From this practice, they believe that consciousness expands. These teachings were accepted by many supporters, but there were also critics of these ideas. A major branch of early Jewish mysticism was Ma'aseh Bereshit, and hopefully you recognize the second word, Bereshit. This branch deals with creation or cosmology. This mystical branch believes that God created the world by means of the 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet and 10 sephirot, which are attributes or emanations or powers by which God becomes manifest. And the sephirot were involved in creation. The sephirot gradually evolved to become the central system of Kabbalah. But there are different interpretations of the sephirot and their relationship to the divine essence. Basically, the sephirot are like a ladder to ascend back to the One. Spiritual and psychological wholeness is achieved by meditating on the qualities of the sephirot, by imitating and integrating the attributes of God. Some critics argue that the theory of sephirot is dualistic, and that by describing 10 aspects of divinity, Kabbalah verges on polytheism. Now, I don't want to get stuck on this particular rabbit trail because it is quite an in-depth topic, but I want you to see that this tradition goes back many centuries, and there is some controversy around it. Although Kabbalah emerged within Judaism, its influence has extended far beyond. An Italian Renaissance humanist named Pico della Mirandola believed Kabbalah to be the original divine revelation. And he believed that it could enable Europeans to comprehend Pythagoras, Plato, and more. Pico claimed that no science can better convince us of the divinity of Jesus Christ than magic and the Kabbalah. His controversial 900 theses laid the foundation of Christian Kabbalistic literature. During and after the Renaissance, some European Christians adopted Kabbalistic ideas for various spiritual practices. Is Kabbalah an occult? Well, it depends on what you mean by occult. That can range from tarot cards to witchcraft. Some forms of modern Kabbalah are connected to occult ideas, but not all. Most scholars prefer to refer to Kabbalah as an esoteric idea, meaning that it's an idea that is supposed to be secret from outsiders. All Kabbalah is esoteric because every branch has exclusive methods for passing on their ideas. So, let's get back to the video that we originally viewed. It comes, based on our discussion, you can see that it comes from the idea that we gain spiritual insights by meditating on the Hebrew letters and seeing them in varying combinations. Let's look back at what the woman presents in the video, and I'll try to make this as clear for everyone listening, but if you happen to be watching this, then you'll be able to follow along with some charts that I'll put up on the screen. Keep in mind, as we go through this, that there is no single authoritative system of definition, so slight variations of the symbolic meanings of the letters and words exist. The first letter is Bet. She assigns the meaning of tent, and that's okay. Or it is more commonly a house, interpreted as a house. The second letter is Resh. She says that it means chief, and that works. It refers also to the head. Then she puts them together to form the word Bar, which means sun. And this is the meaning that she uses in her translation. The third letter is Aleph, which she identifies with God. It can be God, leader, or even breath. The next letter is Sheen. She says it means to destroy. Now, I couldn't find this meaning from, and I looked at multiple sources, and I read that it literally means tooth, and it symbolizes fire and divine illumination. Its shape looks like three branches of a flame. The letter Sheen refers to a process of transformation that does involve breaking down and then rebuilding. So it could include the concept of destruction, but it doesn't stop there. There is also healing and transformation. So her definition about this letter seems like she's recognizing only part of the meaning in order to fit her particular narrative. The next letter is Yod. I found a site that confirms her definition, which is hand, but another reputable site said that it represents the creator because it's like a single point from which creation emerged. The last letter is Tov, which she says symbolizes the cross or covenant. The sources I looked at said that it means mark, sign, omen, or seal. It is the symbol of truth, perfection, and completion because it is the last letter of the alphabet. So many of her meanings of individual letters match what I was able to find by reviewing Kabbalistic websites or websites about Kabbalah, but not all of them matched, which we would expect since there are variations and not one single authoritative system. But then that gives quite a bit of flexibility to read meanings into the text. The woman comes up with the phrase, "the Son of God destroyed by his own hand on a cross." I think that requires quite a bit of reading into the text and obviously adding a few words to make it fluid. These words could be read multiple ways. Also, she makes the first word of the phrase by combining the first two letters into a word, but then she takes the meaning of all of the other letters individually. So she didn't really follow the pattern consistently, or else she would have had to use the meanings of the first two letters individually and start her phrase with something about a house and a chief. So the pattern isn't really consistent, but I think Kabbalah does allow this type of flexibility. Now, in the second section of the video, the woman starts taking sections of the word Bereshit and identifying smaller words within it, such as you might sometimes have done this at a party where you're given a big word like rhinoceros, and then you have to mix and match letters to form a lot of smaller words. In doing this, some Kabbalists are okay with jumping letters, but others emphasize that the order of the letters is important. In the example that we're examining, all of the words are formed by keeping the letters in their original sequence, except one that does require skipping a letter, but the others are in their original sequence. So let's take a minute to look at the words that the woman forms by breaking apart the original word Bereshit into smaller words. As mentioned previously, she says that the Beit and Resh, pronounced together as Bar, means sun. Then she explains that the Shin Yod Tav, pronounced as Shayit, means thorn. The Resh Aleph Shin, pronounced as Rosh, means head. Beit Resh Shin together means tree, and Shin Yod means gift. Now, some of these words, so I found that those were all accurate meanings, but some of these words can have other meanings. So these meanings work as well. So we've established that the smaller words that she put together are real words in Hebrew, although maybe not the most commonly used choices for the way that she's translating them. Then she puts it all together and ends up with the Son of God destroyed by his own hand on a cross with thorns on his head hung up on a tree as a gift of the covenant. So what do you think? Is this valid? Well, it's definitely a creative interpretation. And I would think broader to say, what should Christians think about Kabbalah? We can recognize some good. Kabbalists want to experience God directly. They don't just want to know him logically, but to feel him. Not just obey him, but to be able to approach him. And that's something that I think we can relate to. However, there are substantial differences. Kabbalists typically emphasize unity between God and creation, often seeing creation as emanating from God. While we believe that God is everywhere, God has a distinct identity from his creation. We reject New Age ideas and occult ideas. Kabbalah prioritizes direct spiritual revelation over other key elements of religion. While direct spiritual revelation is important, it should never deviate from or contradict what God has revealed in Scripture. Kabbalah also often puts its own texts on equal status with the Torah, but we only recognize the canonical books of the Bible as divinely inspired. Another issue is that Kabbalah leans heavily on viewing Scripture as allegory. Texts like the Zohar treat the entire Torah as a large collection of mystical symbols, rather than recognizing that there are different genres in the Bible. Yes, parts of the Bible contain layers of meaning. For example, the Exodus was a literal historical event, but it was also a type that found fulfillment in the New Testament. So the Old Testament provides foreshadowings of Christ, but the literal meaning should not be overlooked. Traditionally, restrictions have been placed on the study of Kabbalah, such as minimum age requirements, high moral standards, previous rabbinic learning, being married, and more. The point wasn't to keep people away from Kabbalah, but to protect them. Mystical teachings are enticing, powerful, and potentially dangerous. As one author put it, the spiritual seeker soon discovers that he or she is not exploring something up there, but rather the beyond that lies within. So think about that, the beyond that lies within. Should we be exploring within ourselves or exploring God and his word? The author further says, letting go of traditional notions of God and self can be both liberating and terrifying. In the words of Isaac of Aco, strive to see supernal light, for I have brought you into a vast ocean. Be careful. Strive to see, yet escape drowning. As Christians, we can appreciate efforts to relate to God intimately and the craving to see all that Scripture offers to tell us about him. But we must also be careful about the temptation to emphasize subjective perceptions and secret theories and hidden meanings over God's clearly revealed truths in the Bible. God is so immense that it is hard to fathom, and he is so detailed at a microscopic level. So it is possible that there are layers of meaning to the biblical text. But we should never neglect or override the plain, true sense of the text for some mystical hidden meaning that requires some special personal knowledge. Like many Jewish sages have warned, it is potentially dangerous. Thank you for joining me for today's episode of All Things Apostolic. And until next time, take care and God bless.